Okay, now let's move, we'll save 887, Commissioner Novick, unless you want to do it right away. We'll go ahead and move to our 1045 time certain, number 877.
Authorize an intergovernmental agreement with Multnomah County to provide House Bill 3194, Offender Law Enforcement Supervision and Support.
Well, speaking of intergovernmental cooperation, here we are. And we've got a panel, I think, to come forward here of Judge Waller and Abby Stamp from Local Public Safety Coordinating Commission, Suzanne Hayden, Chief Reese, perhaps someone from the DA's office. I don't see Rod Underhill, but we have others here on his behalf. This is, of course, the implementation work on House Bill 3194, which seeks to divert people from prison and jail who are better served by other programs for offenders. And it's good work. It requires a lot of cooperation among prosecutors, police, criminal justice system, and then others who maybe we'll need to call on more, like folks that provide employment and housing and other parts of life that we want these folks to stay in that world and not drift back into the world of criminal activity. So that's the philosophy behind this. The legislature, in my opinion, did good work when they passed this law, and this team is doing good work in starting to make it real here. So we appreciate you coming this morning and this agreement, which starts actually funding specific positions and specific work in the police bureau and elsewhere to carry out our side of this cooperative partnership. So thank you and welcome.
Thank
Who's
you
on first?
Very
you,
much
Abby?
For having us. Welcome. Thank you. Yes, Abby Stamp, Local Public Safety Coordinating Council Executive Director. Good morning, Commissioners and Mr. Mayor. Our intent today is to give you just a bit of background about our program. I know we've met with many of you individually, wanting to make sure we're all good to go and covering what is going to happen with this program as we move forward. And we have Chief Reese here to discuss the intricacies of the intergovernmental agreement so that we can bring the county that's funneled through, bring the money funneled through the county into to the city to make those positions and those efforts funded as you speak to Mr. Mayor. So we have a very brief PowerPoint. I know many of you have seen this. I will go through it rather quickly just for some context. So there we go. So what is Justice Reinvestment? It seeks to improve public safety by reducing spending on incarceration in order to reinvest savings locally in evidence-based strategies to decrease crime. And our formula by the state readjustment goals are to include in sentencing changes, have a reduction in recidivism, which we anticipate will increase public safety, and as stated, Mr. Mayor, decrease prison growth. So the money not spent on increased prison costs is going to be invested here in Multnomah County as well as Portland. So the part of 3194, this House bill that we anticipated going through, is significantly impactful in terms of the funding for future prison costs. There was going to be an anticipated cost of $600 million over 10 years. And so the House bill intends to reduce this growth by reducing sentences on some drug and property offenses and increasing, as I said, local criminal justice funding. And so the state created a grant funding program, and that is how the monies are allocated through Multnomah County, and myself as the Local Public Safety Coordinating Council Director. And so we've been facilitating this process now for a couple of years, and we will introduce all of the panel of folks who walked up just a moments ago, who've been working collaboratively to create this program here in Multnomah County about what that's going to look like. And all of our programming speaks to the goals, which include reducing recidivism, protecting public safety, controlling prison growth, and provide for funding for community-based sanctions, services, and supervision. And that's specifically what the IGA today speaks to. This is quite small, but hopefully you can still see it. These are the folks who are both here today and have been around the table for the past almost 2 years to actually create significant changes in the way some offenders are adjudicated in terms of the risk and needs assessment, where that is done in their programming. So Typically, I know you know, but just for a little review, traditionally, when offenders are placed on probation with Scott Taylor and the Community Justice through Multnomah County, they are given a risk needs assessment. What do you need? Do you need housing? Do you need employment services? What are your needs so that you can create a crime-free life and be a productive citizen? What this group has done is created a massive change that takes that assessment and puts it actually at the beginning of the case processing so that the judicial system, the defense bar, and the district attorney's office have very deep and good understanding about specific offender risk and needs to inform sentencing and helps us get a better sense of, are there folks that we could safely supervise in our community with significant resources, services, sanctions, and supervision rather than sending them to prison, which would save additional prison beds in addition to the sentence changes indicated in 3194. So this is a little image of where those red boxes of where those changes happen. We pulled a population, the offenders of 1 year ago who would have been eligible for this program, the MCJRP, Multnomah County Justice Reinvestment Program, now lovingly known as MCJRP. It is presumptive prison offenders, mostly single male, has children, but not necessarily parenting their children, high school education or less, monthly income is less than $1,000, on public assistance, unstable housing, has a history of drug convictions, and relies on transportation. So what this program does is indicates that we are looking at this target population, folks that could be supervised locally, and to make that target wider and to make sure that we're making those decisions safely, soundly, and providing intensive services to make that happen. So just a few takeaways, and I'll turn it over to the IGA process, and if you have any other questions for the folks who have been doing this work. Public safety first and foremost. More informed sentencing and supervision of an existing population. This is not a new population of offenders coming to Multnomah County. These would be folks who would be supervised in Portland and our county anyway. We're just doing it at a different time and with more information. We want to always have safe communities, smart stewardship, utilizing healthcare transformation, the Affordable Care Act, and better science, as well as justice reinvestment opportunities to get better outcomes for safety and for the folks we seek to serve and assist. And of course, all of our work is evidence-based and data-driven. So with me, Judge Nan Waller, presiding judge for Multnomah County, Scott Taylor, director of Multnomah County Community Justice, and Chief Mike Reese of Portland Police. I'm going to step back and allow someone else who has agency authority in creating these program changes who might have some additional information for you. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Abby. Questions for Abby before she stands down? Great. Thank you. Who's next? Judge Waller? You?
This has been, I think, truly an amazing process to be involved in that we have taken some principles as to how we want to do business, and not only have all been around the table, but we've all come to agreement and agreed to change the process of how we do our business, how we make decisions. The goal of this is that in better informed decision making, we will have sentences that are more individualized, that fit the needs and risks of the individual, and with the money that the state is providing us, and our hope and goal is, and I just looked at the economic forecast for September, and we're still looking okay as a state, so we're hoping that there will be additional funding in the next biennium for this project where we will be able to increase the kind of services that we are providing. We're looking for individualized service plans that are specific to the needs and risks of the individual. As a judge, I cannot tell you how exciting this is to think that I won't just be given what the deal is when a person is coming before the court for sentencing, but I'll really have information as to what this person needs in order to stay safely in the community. And then I will know that DCJ is putting together service plans that will actually meet those needs and risks, so it won't just be theoretically they need housing or they need treatment. I'll have information that they will be getting the housing, they will be getting the treatment that they need, and we'll have a level of supervision so that we know that they are not only it's accessible, but that they are following through. And I think that with all of that, and then if there are problems, we know that the police will be there to provide the backup and support to make sure that people are being kept in, the defendants that we are dealing with are being kept in the loop, being sought out if there are issues in terms of their follow through. We know that swift action is often very helpful in terms of getting compliance. We also have a hope that we will incorporate the principles of procedural justice into this project so that as people are coming before the court or interacting with any of the myriad systems they will be interacting with, that they will have a good understanding of what is going on. They will feel that they are respected. They will have had an opportunity to tell their story. We know from the research that when all of that happens, that they are more likely to comply with court orders, which ultimately is what we want in this project.
Judge, I just have one question, and it's something that you kind of raised as in our discussion, which is, to someone who just sees the headline that people that were otherwise eligible to be sentenced to prison will be released and will make these investments. Tell us in a public forum why you're so confident that this will be beneficial to the public and won't have a negative public safety consequence.
We are looking at how we better serve the community by making sure that people who are ultimately going to be back in our community, whether they've served a prison term, whether they've been in jail, that we are able to immediately serve them in the community and maintain public safety by having wraparound services that meet their risks and needs. And we are assuring that they will continue to be productive members of our community. So we're going to look at employment so that they can be productive. We are going to look at stabilized housing so that they will be able to maintain their connection to community justice and maintain their job. We're going to look at their substance abuse and mental health needs. So I think that there's the short-term impact on the community, which is we are going to have eyes on in a very intensive way for the first 120 days that the person is out in the community and on probation with lots of wraparound services. And then the longer term is they're not going to come back again. They're not going to continue to cycle through the community, through the public safety system.
Thank you. Director Taylor, Chief Reese, who's next?
For the record, I'm Scott Taylor. I'm the Director of Department of Community Justice for Multnomah County. And we're very excited about the collaboration that goes on. I sat on the Governor's Commission that helped work on this law, and in Multnomah County it is being realized the way it was thought of. When we say collaboration, a lot of us use that word, but I've been at some 7 a.m. meetings where we had some real dynamic conversations with each other and found a way to actually work through that for the betterment of the community and the supervision. And tying on to what the judge talked about, we get all these people on supervision sooner or later. They all reside here. We manage them locally, and we're just trying to step up what all the information and the data would tell us makes us better at trying to design programs and hold people accountable. And so the combination, and I'll let him do the most of the talking about it, but the dynamic we're working on with the local law enforcement is just one more set of that certainty and that swift and certain that we know makes a difference. And this allows us, this funding allows us to actually work earlier in the system, knowing who and what we've got, so that the plans, when they come out after sentencing, match what we're trying to affect. And then we think we have built an accountability model if that's not what you want to do.
Great. Chief.
Well, first and foremost, I want to thank Commissioner Novick for his early support with this endeavor. He was present for our initial meetings and was very engaged in helping us form the, I think, holistic response to the population that we're trying to serve. The money that is coming towards the city is helping to fund the police response to dealing with some of the public safety concerns. So wherever the offenders live in our jurisdiction, we are going to have police officers working closely with the district attorney's office and with DCJ on doing follow-up, making sure that if there is a plan in place for that person, that they're being held accountable for the plan. Certainly a lot of the folks that we deal with that are going to be impacted by 3194 are drug offenders. They're people that have serious addictions. And when they don't show up for a parole or probation meeting and they're spiraling back down to that addiction, we've got to intercept them and get them back into treatment, back into the housing earlier. And that's where our police officers are going to play a critical role. It has been a unique collaboration, and part of the effort here has been creating alignment among a lot of different system components that we haven't had these robust conversations in the past. And having DCJ, police, the courts, the defense bar, the district attorney all present and working through some real stumbling blocks in how you deal with these offenders and create information earlier in the system so that we can all make better decisions has been critically important. I want to thank my partners for their effort and their willingness to listen to really disparate points of view.
Thank you. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. My name is Caroline Wong. I'm with the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office, and I'm the Deputy District Attorney assigned to this project. One thing I do want to mention in response to Commissioner Fish's question is I would like to reiterate that not all the cases that are eligible for this program will actually receive probation. There are some offenders whose criminal histories are so great and whose risks to reoffend are so great that prison really is the only option for them. So in terms of public safety, we are weeding those folks out as part of this assessment process. For those, however, that do receive probation, there is incentive for them to be successful while on probation. Not only now do we have the tools to address their needs, but a judge can always revoke probation and send them to prison if they're not performing up to par while they're on this probationary high-risk supervision. One other thing that I would like to mention is not only are we attempting to get these offenders stabilized in the community through treatment and through housing, but also through employment development. One of the things that we discussed was the impact on victims for these crimes that are property-related, ID theft, burglaries. And one of the biggest impacts for these victims are the fact that they are impacted financially, and there is restitution owed to them. So one of the goals of the project is if we can get them stabilized, get them working, then they will have the money to pay back the restitution to these victims.
Important. That's great. Who's next?
Good morning. My name is Lane Borg. I'm the executive director of Metropolitan Public Defenders, and I was the defense representative on this this effort. And the thing that I again, answering maybe a further answer to Commissioner Fish's question is that, and also explaining one of the early slides that Abby showed you, is that the reason why we have to pull the assessment prior to the disposition is because this program is in Multnomah County is unique in the state in that we're looking at a much deeper cut of offenders, of defendants. We're looking at Measure 11. Nobody else in any kind of justice reinvestment is even touching Measure 11 offenders. We're looking at Tier 2 Measure 11 offenders. We're looking at ballot Measure 57 people.
What is it, for the benefit of all of us, what's a Tier 2 Measure 11?
It would be like assault 2s, robbery 2s in the those are the big ones, because we have some exclusions from that. We don't do sex cases. We're not doing domestic, at this point, doing domestic violence cases or homicide cases. But one of the things that the De Munis Commission discovered in looking at the original suggestions and proposals around reforming through 3194 was that they discovered that the big drivers to Department of Corrections in Measure 11 is assault 2 and robbery 2. They're disproportionately represented in terms of the offenses of Measure 11. And so those are here. We're looking at those, and we're asking the question, does this person need to go to prison now, or can we put them on probation and safely monitor them in the community? But it's because our dispositions in the state, because determinate sentencing happens, and it might be the judge has no option but prison if certain outcomes happen, that we had to pull that informed conversation prior to disposition. So Rod Underhill and the District Attorney's Office gets a lot of credit for doing what other DA's offices are not doing around the state, which is to have that conversation to kind of be a little more vulnerable that way and say, let's talk about that and see if we can ask the question, does this person need to go to prison at this point? So I think that's one reason why we had to pull that in. And the other is that there's been some, I think, a lot of criticism around risk assessment, and some of it's justified, but we have to remember in this program, everybody starts with their presumptive prison. We're not taking every offender that's charged with a minor drug offense that we're already putting into drug treatment court or something. These are people that if the outcome doesn't change, they're going to prison. They're going to DOC from the original charge. And so it's simply trying to have a discussion about what is the best plan, because the other thing that this exploration of DOC has shown us in the last couple of years is that 20% of the population going into DOC is revocation population. So one of the matrices we need to look at is what are we doing, not just with the 80% that we're decreasing on original sentences, but are we decreasing the 20% too? Are we making better decisions so people are being successful, not violating their probation, and we're not having to revoke them and send them in too? So there's a data-rich environment that we can hopefully learn something about our systems from.
By the way, so sad is the state of television that I noticed last night on all the cable channels there was a big national discussion about whether to revoke the bail probation of a notorious Hollywood felon named Justin Bieber. And I thought that was a sad misuse of.
No, I think we're going to try to avoid celebrities in this.
You're here.
Welcome. Good morning. I am Linda Yankee. I'm Chief Deputy for the Sheriff's Office. And the Sheriff's Office role in this 3194 project is to make sure that those offenders that are held in custody, that we want to make sure that we dedicate resources to ensure that when the parole and probation officers come in to conduct the assessment that we're doing at the front end, that we get the offenders to the contact visit for the PO to complete the assessment as timely as possible and connect them with their attorneys as well. The Sheriff's Office also will play a small role in assisting the Bureau in bringing offenders into custody if they need so because they're being violated or such.
Great. Questions? Thank you all very much. Are there other panel members, other partner members of the partnership that want to come up and speak at this point? Okay. Stand by for questions if there are any. Is there any citizens signed up to speak?
No one signed up.
Okay. Well, then I think we're ready to take a roll call.
Actually, Mr. Mayor, could I just make a comment? I'd like to give a shout out to Suzanne Hayden of the Citizens Crime Commission, who played an instrumental role in helping to pull all of these folks together for those 7 a.m. meetings, and I appreciate Reese's shout outs. I mean, I did attend some of those 7 a.m. meetings, and it was a fantastic experience because Multnomah County was doing something that I don't think the other counties were doing, which was to imagine, okay, if the governor's vision is successful and the state starts giving counties some money to spend on things other than prison to reduce recidivism, how would we spend it? And it was remarkable to watch this group of people and Rod Underhill, who was there at the 7 a.m. meetings, sit down together and talk that through and come up with a consensus approach, which Heidi Moad, the governor's public safety director, I've heard her say in public that this is a model for the rest of the state. I also think that it's worth noting that so far, as I understand it, Multnomah County is kind of leading the way for the rest of the state in keeping increased sentences down, I mean, in keeping the prison population statewide down. So this is quite a remarkable achievement, and there's a lot of people, some of them here, but a couple of them not, so I particularly want to just give a shout-out to Suzanne Hayden and to Rod Underhill for what's happening. Thank you.
Commissioner Novick, may I just ask you a question? Under this IGA, the county will pay the city $152,000 for two police officers who will perform a role. We have a bad habit in this nation of developing policies where we say that if there are savings, we'll reinvest the savings in the program. How secure is the funding going forward for this program?
My understanding is that the money that the county got from the state for this biennium was on sort of a formula basis. Everybody gets, you know, if you breathe, you get the money. In the future, the money will be more competitive, and counties will get more money if they demonstrate that they're doing things that are intentional and evidence-based and that really work. So I think that given that the county is leading the state in terms of evidence-based, thoughtful, consensus approach to this issue, we can't guarantee anything, but we're going to be in better shape than anybody else in the state. Does the panel agree with that assessment?
Thank you.
And is it your hope that at that point there might be more money for housing and treatment programs?
Yes. But should somebody weigh in?
Yeah.
Oh, hi. Abby Stamp again from Lipsick.
So with the funding we got from this biennium from 1315, we laid the groundwork for what we hope will be a bigger, more robust program. And we took a very successful program through the Department of Community Justice, the Reentry Enhanced Reentry Program, the REC program, which includes housing, workforce development, treatment, and very much wraparound services for folks being supervised in a very assertive way once they're released from prison. So our initial dollars grew that program, and what we have done is set up some very deep data collection from every different public safety agency, and our keeping track of what are the needs of all of the offenders and what services do they get, so that as we are able to plan for future biennia, as we hope the money will continue to grow as more money is saved at the state level, we can start to capitalize and build more on housing, workforce, treatment, and other indicated needs as we see it through our growing population. And I will add, part of what our data collection includes is looking at demographics, including race and ethnicity, so that we can watch disproportionate minority contact and see what happens through this program. For example, there could be a decrease in people of color who are sentenced to DOC. That may happen. If so, what we may see locally is more folks of color on supervision in the Department of Community Justice, and to make sure there's deep understanding about that data and how that phenomenon may come to be. But all of this data collection will allow us for future planning to make sure that we're doing the right things and buying the right things and growing the right capacity in the community to serve this population.
Abby, assuming you're enrolling everyone in the Affordable Care Act, to what extent does universal health care help you cover some of the costs of the drug and alcohol treatment?
I think there is still a lot that is yet unknown, but we at the county are working very closely with many facility-based providers and outpatient providers to keep lines of communication open to understand what we can do to capitalize on as much as possible, because we all need that to happen. And so, as we said in the beginning presentation of the slideshow, it's one of the major components, making sure we capitalize on those dollars locally in addition to all of the potential opportunities so that we can create as much stability as possible. Right? Anything else?
Thanks, Abby. Great. Thank you all. So let's take a roll call, please, on the intergovernmental agreement.
Novick?
Again, thanks to everybody who's been working hard on these issues for years now. And I also just need to say that we talk a lot recently about the fact that crime is now down to mid-1960s levels. And I think it's important to note that in about 1965, the crime rates are about what they are now, and the number of people in prison was adjusted for population 2/7 what it is now. So you've had a 350% increase per capita in the number of people in prison with the same crime rate, which suggests that it is possible to have the crime this low with fewer people in prison. And I'm very proud that Multnomah County is leading the way and trying to figure out how to make that happen. Aye.
Fritz.
I also thank everybody, excuse me, and Commissioner Fish and Judge Wallace's answer regarding folks who might say that why are we investing so much money in people who have done bad things, and part of the answer is because it costs less in the long run to do that, as well as taking care of the folks. So I very much appreciate this approach. I also appreciate the comments on the disparities for people of color, and one of the things I was most pleased to hear when I had the briefing in my office, which I very much appreciate you coming around ahead of time to have a more detailed discussion. And so the question raised by Dante James of the Office of Equity and Human Rights has been, should the voters of the state of Oregon legalize marijuana in the fall, will we then have a lot of folks in prisons, people of color, who have been convicted for something that now other folks are going to make a boatload of money off? The answer is, and I was glad to hear this, for quite some time that we have been the justice system has been backing off putting people in prison for those kinds of offenses, which means that there are only a few folks in the prisons. That's something that we should have on our legislative agenda, that if the laws regarding marijuana change, that there should be rapid reentry of folks and potentially some pardons or whatever the correct term is that the governor can do to get those folks back into the community for something which then will be legal. Of course, it's a different question about whether it should be, but the voters will make up their minds not in November. Thank you very much for all your work. Aye.
Fish?
Well, I want to thank our distinguished panel for their testimony and for briefing us on this very innovative idea. And I also want to thank Chief Reese and the mayor for embracing this and making sure that we're full partners in this innovation. And as my colleagues know, I've been spending the month of August working through a checklist. My wife left me for how I had to clean up the house in her absence. And one of them is going through all my old files. And I came across an old file of containing stuff from Commissioner Novick, old letters he sent me for one cause or another that used to have, like, an executive director, one board member, and one cause that he championed. But my favorite...
Well, it's several board members.
There is that one. My favorite... I was proud to fund them all, too. But my favorite in the file was a piece of campaign literature from 2011. And in it, Commissioner Novick listed three priorities that he wanted to work on as a city commissioner. And it actually specifically referenced this idea and why it needed to happen at the state level in very plain English. And then, of course, we know it resulted in 3194. And how many times does a candidate then as a commissioner get to vote on something that he championed upstream and thought was a good idea? So congratulations, Steve. And I think we sometimes take for granted that we do our best work through a collaborative model. But let's celebrate today what collaboration means locally. And you are a shining example of that. So thank you all very much. Bye.
Hales.
Well, presumably, Commissioner Fish, if you complete that checklist, she'll come back. So that's the other upside to completing the checklist.
He did commit to spending $100 million to address housing. I found that in the small print of that literature. We'll come back and talk about that today.
Well, this is a great first step, and it may make those of you who worked so hard thus far a little tired to hear me call it a first step, because a lot of work has gone into this effort. But I see this as not just a pilot project, that we will demonstrate that we are working smarter in Multnomah County, that our judges and our prosecutors and our Department of Community Justice and our defense bar and everyone else engaged in this process that we've heard from today are continuing to work smarter and deal with people who break the law in an intelligent, humane way. That's the goal. I think we're going to do that. I think that's going to play out thanks to this partnership. But I see it as a first step in a couple of other ways. I've spent quite a bit of time lately with Mike Nutter, the mayor of Philadelphia, who has this amazing program that I'm thinking about emulating here called the PREP program, where they provide a tax incentive for, he no longer calls them ex-offenders, returning citizens who then come back into the community and are employed. And the numbers and the stories that he tells about that program are inspiring and make me want to emulate that good example. So I want this partnership to call on us not just to keep supporting the partnership at the governmental level, but call on us as elected leaders who are all committed to this work to go buttonhole other people. Hey, private sector, we need your help. We need more jobs. Hey, nonprofits who are doing drug treatment and rehabilitation, we need you to change your approach and up your game this way. So I hope that all of you will call on us, whether from the bench or on a less formal way, to say, hey, city, you know, you're in this program as our partner. Yes, you've got some police officers assigned. You've got a sergeant who's assigned specifically to this work. But there are other things that you at the city can help with to save money, save people's lives, restore these returning citizens to full citizenship. So I know you won't be shy because I heard about those 7 a.m. meetings, what they were like. So thank you, Commissioner Novick, for that work as well. But as you continue to work together, call on us to call on others to build on the intergovernmental agreement to be more of a community basis than just us in the public sector. Look forward to that work as well. Thank you all. Aye. Thanks very much.